I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WIAB. Thanks for joining me today. It's Wednesday. Next hour, we will focus in on health as we do every Wednesday with Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. We're going to talk a little bit. I've been talking for a while. I'm not trying to get everybody to do what I'm doing. I do health experiments on myself through nutrition, and recently I've been doing the carnivore diet. But I wanted to address one thing that I've gotten into a lot of conversations with. The first thing when I tell people this is what I'm trying, they say, but your cholesterol. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what cholesterol is, what it is responsible for in the body. I don't think people understand exactly how important cholesterol actually is and what it's used for. But there's some really interesting science around red meat that has been vilified basically across the medical establishment. Of course, now they're attacking it from the sustainability of our planet angle. But there's incredibly good things that come from red meat, and as human beings, we are designed to eat it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then I'm going to read a story, too. It's a mental health story, essentially, and it's a bit of reading. I'll try to use some inflections. It'd be like reading a story, but and it is about the damages, particularly to our children, when it comes to social media. So I think we'll have time to get into that as well. So we'll do that next hour. For this hour, I think I've got the longest quote of the day ever. And this is from the great Ron Paul. And he's written a story. I think the headline was, yeah, this is it. Will the midterms change anything? And this is Ron Paul, former Republican congressman from Texas, known libertarian Republican. And he wrote this, and I felt like it could have been written for my show. He said, many experts expect public anger over inflation to enable Republicans to regain a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives and maybe the Senate in next week's midterm elections. However, even if very close Senate races broke in Republicans' favor and the new Republican majority was determined to pass a pro-liberty agenda, there would still not be the votes to override President Biden's vetoes or Chuck Schumer's filibusters. Pro-liberty legislation, cutting spending, or protecting our First, Second, and Fifth Amendment rights, or shutting down the Department of Education, or auditing the Federal Reserve would not become law. The fact that such pro-liberty legislation would not become law is a reason many Republicans, Republican Congress members feel comfortable co-sponsoring and voting for such bills. One of the dirty secrets of American politics is that the establishment of both parties supports the corporatist welfare warfare state and the fiat money system that makes it all possible. While they quibble over the details, the only real disagreement between the two parties is over which one is better able to run the economy, run the world, and run our personal lives. Now, within this piece, I'm not going to read the entire thing, he talks about the benefit of a red wave coming is that it could stall out the incredibly horrific policies of Joe Biden, and that is why I am hoping for a red wave. He also mentions that Senator Rand Paul, his son, would be heading the committee to investigate Anthony Fauci. That would be fun to watch, for sure. And he mentions some good liberty candidates out there like Blake Masters in Arizona, which I've spoken about and told you yesterday the libertarian candidate in that race stopped campaigning and sent his support to Blake Masters, who is a liberty Republican in Arizona. But Ron Paul ends with this. While we should support those few politicians who stand up for liberty, we should remember that we cannot rely on politicians alone to restore liberty. Instead, the only way to win back our liberty is to change the political and cultural environment politicians operate in. That is why converting a critical mass of people to libertarianism is crucial. Our victory will come not by electing a libertarian majority to Congress, but by controlling the political and intellectual environment so even the authoritarians feel compelled to vote for liberty. The great Ron Paul. And he's exactly right. I've become a dues-paying member of the Libertarian Party. I've got to renew my membership. They constantly keep reminding me I need to come off that $25 just to support what's going on in the Libertarian Party. But I'm under no illusions. Libertarian Party is going to win. But if you want actual pro-freedom legislation to come out of Republicans, you better start electing some libertarian-leaning guys. Mississippi, we're lost. It's not going to happen here. I don't really even know why I mentioned it in Mississippi. I think it's the boomers. I think it's the boomers that continue to give us the Roger Wickers and stuff. So we'll see in the future, maybe in 20 years, younger people will have made the move to turn their back wholly on the establishment Republican Party, particularly in these days as we're talking about and this new boondoggle of $250 million going to this new company up in was the Columbus area. We're going to talk tomorrow with Americans for Prosperity if they get to come in. They may be busy down at the Capitol now as they try to give this corporate welfare. You know, our super red majority conservative state here can't give out corporate welfare fast enough. And Stephen Utroska this morning covered all of the dollar figures of it. We're going to pay $240,000 per job. Can you imagine? I know a lot of small business owners. I can't imagine what they would do with $50,000 per job for them to create. Make it very, very easy for them to create a whole lot of jobs. But this is your Republican Party, and it's kind of interesting. This is exactly what I've been bellyaching with on my segments with Americans for Prosperity. This is the Mississippi model, which is they won't reduce tax. They won't get rid of the state income tax. They won't do anything exciting. What they do is about every 5 to 10 years, they do a big ribbon cutting after handing out a bunch of taxpayer dollars to attract one large employer and then go out and campaign on it. So if you think about it, exactly what the Republican Party's plan is here in the state of Mississippi in their current form, save the Freedom Caucus, which are Republicans who are actually for limited government. The GOP in this state is to, their plan is to rob about 3 million people, give a bunch of money to a handful of people who pass on a little bit of it to 1,000 employees, declare victory, and then campaign on it. And what's really disgusting about this special session that Tate Reeves has called with only a few days' notice, and then according to Stephen Utroska, and we'll see how it plays out, they may be given one day to take this bill through committees to the floors and get it passed. That's the plan, I guess, that they have. These kinds of projects don't just pop up. This stuff has been discussed and has been planned for months. Negotiations have been ongoing. But now the legislature is being tasked with this idea. Well, we got to get them the money. We got to go ahead and do it now. You mean to tell me this company who's planning on investing a couple of billion dollars in the state of Mississippi and hiring 1,000 people, they can't wait 2 weeks? 1 week to find out? They said they've been planning this for months, if not years, but they can't wait more than one more day to find out whether or not they're going to get this sweet taxpayer cash. This really, there's days where I'm just proud to be the kind of the lone voice in Central Mississippi taking on the Republican Party constantly and trying to explain the game to everybody. This is one of those days. This is one of those days. These things do not work out for the benefit of the taxpayer. You can imagine, you know, I spent some time in Texas recently, and one of the things a lot of people over in Texas talked about was that they enjoyed living in Texas, and I spoke to some business owners in Texas as well, and one of the things that they talked about was the fact that there was no income tax there. So it's not hard to attract a bunch of businesses to Mississippi. You don't have to rob 3 million people and then take giant chunks of it and hand it out to a select company that you want to be a victor. I know there's a campaign season coming up. We got re-elections going on next year. Next year's an election year for Mississippi. I'm sure this company will be doling out the campaign cash based on the votes or what they anticipate the votes to be. But this is your Republican Party. The best you can say about them at this point, not as bad as the Democratic Party. Certainly, we don't have a good exit. There's not a great alternative in the state of Mississippi. But boy, wouldn't it be great if people actually held Republicans accountable for their pledges to small, limited government, low taxation, free markets, capitalism, these kinds of things that they profess. Wouldn't it be great if we actually held them accountable to that? I don't see it coming anytime soon. Yeah, they'll probably get this done. The Freedom Caucus is small, unfortunately, because, again, most Mississippians don't pay attention to those things. And speaking of that, I had kind of an interesting... No, I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and take a break. Kind of an interesting thing. There's certain headlines that are clickbait for Mike Madison, for sure. And it's always when anything that tells me that the voters are not engaged or disgusted with the system, I love those things. That's the first step, is just absolute disregard for the political system that we've created in this country, or allowed to metastasize, is, I guess, a better way to put it. But anytime I see headlines like that, I jump on them. And I'm going to juxtapose that with some approval ratings. It's kind of interesting to compare. We're constantly told that Vladimir Putin in Russia needs to be dethroned. We need regime change. He's no good. He's a terrible leader. I think it's kind of interesting to take a look at Vladimir Putin's approval ratings and compare them to the presidents of the United States here. These numbers might suggest regime change is much more needed here than it is there. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, Joe Rogan interviewing Anthony Kiedis. He is the lead singer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think one of the greatest rock and roll bands to ever exist. I had the opportunity when I was at the University of Georgia. Red Hot Chili Peppers were just really cranking up. I saw them in a room. I think there were 250 people there. It was like a very small, like a ballroom at a Hilton type thing. And so you were right there with the band, and this is before, and I remember bringing them back. I worked the summer afterwards. I was working at a record store. Yeah, I'm old. I'm old, aren't I? I was working at a music store, I'll put it that way, when I came back, and I brought all this Red Hot Chili Pepper stuff with me because it hadn't really hit yet, and everybody was wondering what in the world this stuff was, but I had seen them. It was just the most incredible show that I saw, so I've always been a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. We're talking to Anthony Kiedis. The only reason I even thought about this was the bump music then was Chris Cornell. He had such an incredible rock voice. He committed suicide a few years ago. He was under psychiatric care and on pharmaceuticals for his depression, I believe. But he committed suicide, a great loss. He had just incredible voice. So it just reminded me of Red Hot Chili Peppers. But I was listening to this Joe Rogan show yesterday, and he was talking about kind of the trappings of fame. And how it really can be quite annoying. Some days he just wants to go out into the world and not be hassled. But he said, you know, I really have to understand exactly how lucky I am. And he said, I've got this new philosophy. And he recounted what had kind of woken him up to get some level of perspective. And he was talking about this girl that he had met at one of his shows somewhere. He knew a couple of painters, is the way he described them. Couple of girls, and they wanted to come to the show. He said, oh, I'll get you some passes. Y'all come on in, come backstage. We'd love to have you at the show. And so they show up, and he said he met this 33-year-old girl. He said she was just beautiful inside and out. Said she was just so incredible. Just radiated love and positivity. Just really a very special person, enough for it to have really kind of struck him as this was somebody that was a very special human. And then he just says, and then I learned 2 weeks later, she just woke up dead. And he makes the comment, he says, you know, because young people are just dying these days. Now, I have not listened to the rest of the Joe Rogan. I was just sitting there waiting for Rogan to say, do you know if she was vaccinated? I mean, for even Anthony Kiedis, and I believe to my great disappointment, the Red Hot Chili Peppers may have done a PSA about these shots. I can't remember if it was them. I know Gene Simmons was very strident, the bass player for Kiss, very strident about how dare you walk amongst us, you unvaccinated. I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers actually did a very disappointing PSA for the vaccine too, but I was certainly waiting for Rogan to ask the question. As he's recounting the story of this beautiful girl, beautiful on the inside, beautiful on the outside, 33 years old, wakes up, she's just dead. I'll report back to you. Rogan, they got into the philosophical points of, yeah, you got to have some level of perspective with your life, even with the inconveniences and frustrations that we have these days. At least we don't wake up dead. It's really amazing that that's just, and for the lead singer, for Anthony Kiedis, to say, yeah, you know, young people are just dying these days. There was no reason for this girl to have died. He said they don't really know what it was. She didn't have a heart attack. She wasn't shot. She didn't fall off a ladder. She just woke up. She was dead. And for him to admit, yeah, that's just the way things are going these days. You know, that's just what happens. Maybe it's the sun's rays. I mean, you know, just when you go through these times where young people just drop dead. No, that's not the case. I've lived a long enough life, long enough to have just told you that I worked at a record store. I've lived long enough to know that I haven't lived through a time where young people just arbitrarily die. I was a kid. I didn't have a lot of stories of some of my friends just dropping dead when we were taking attendance at school, at college, in my young adult life. Nobody was worried about somebody just dropping dead, not calling and checking, hey, you still alive? It's really quite amazing what they have gotten away with this, and just like it's not happening, even though everybody knows it's happening. Very bizarre times. There was this poll. The headline was Gallup, voter enthusiasm down. Now, that's the kind of headline I can get behind. To a lot of people, that's horrible. You got to get engaged. You got to get out there and fight for freedom. But as I read to you the initial very long quote of the day from Ron Paul, you're not going to get any more freedom from the midterms. You may stop some of the most horrific policies of the Biden administration, and that's to be cheered. I am all for a red wave, but if you think you're going to get any level of freedom, if you think your life is going to be dramatically improved, now it might not be further destroyed, and that's, again, that's a positive. Mitigating damage is a part of the calculation in life, but if you think you're going to actually get your freedoms back, so when I see voters who are just tuned out, the statistics, they're a little dry, but 49% have given elections a lot of thought this year, down from 54% in 2018, and they're just surprised that more people aren't engaged the closer the midterms get. I got to tell you, since we don't get any real positive results from however we vote, it just doesn't really matter. Now, a lot of people will take exception with me, particularly when it comes to some particular political saviors out there. We don't really get much for our vote. Being tuned out may be the best option. And I thought this was kind of interesting, and I guess I'll tie it in here. I've had this for a couple of days. I read something, you know, someone talking about, there's always talk in Russia about how unpopular Putin is. If you read the Drudge Report, which has taken this weird lefty establishment turn over the past 3 or 4 years, used to be the go-to conservative site for headlines, but I still look at it because it's a good news aggregator and my time is valuable. I need to get about 100 headlines to just get a take a temperature of the world very quickly. So I still look at it, and I'm even interested in the left turn of Drudge. It's quite fascinating. But since I'm not a party tribalist, I don't run away from headlines that might not be to my liking. I actually look at them sometimes and see if I can learn anything. But if you're in the tribe, I know you've probably left Drudge a long time ago. But there have been a lot of stories about, you know, Putin's military is rebelling against him. People are fleeing the country. This Putin guy's got to go. He's just got to go. And so I thought I would just take a look. I did another one of my things that takes me about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds. Anybody could do this, if you do. I'll even take, I've got queued up in YouTube. I haven't watched it yet. It's about an hour and a half, maybe hour and 45 minute speech by Vladimir Putin. It is actually, I can't do an hour and a half of subtitles. I just can't do it. It's too distracting to me. I would rather just read it in a form, in a transcript form, then watch that. But this is actually translated. So I'm very interested. Putin gives some very long speeches. And you know what he does that's very interesting for a world leader? When you think about Joe Biden, really, Donald Trump was pretty good about sticking around and taking a bunch of questions. He liked to talk. But most presidents don't do. They do rehearsed stuff with a teleprompter. And then particularly in Joe Biden's case, boop, they're gone. They may stumble through two questions. In the case of Joe Biden, he knows more than two questions that aren't already planted. He's in big trouble, so he just takes no questions. Vladimir Putin sometimes will talk for hours. He just sits there, kind of leaning back in his chair with his legs crossed, like he's in your living room talking to you, and he just talks. It's very unrehearsed. Now, Vladimir Putin is, I'm sure, wildly corrupt. He's a bit of a thug. They've got some authoritarian tendencies in Russia. But this idea that we need to get rid of Vladimir Putin for the good of the world and for the good of Russia. Let's take a look at Vladimir Putin's approval ratings. It's kind of interesting. He started out at around 45% approval rating. Now, in the United States, in modern history, I'm going to give you these numbers too. That's actually pretty good. Nobody likes the presidents that we have here necessarily. Well, I mean, I know a lot of people love some presidents, but the overall approval rating throughout the population is 45% in the United States is really good. That's where he started out, and he immediately went up to about 80%. He went up to about 80%, and Vladimir Putin's approval ratings have pretty much hovered around 75%, going between 70 and 80-85%. Currently, the latest numbers are somewhere in the 75% approval rating of Russians. And I just find that kind of interesting how the United States can throw all these stones and talk about this guy being a bad guy and we need to get rid of him and the poor people of Russia being suppressed by this leader, yet his approval ratings are basically double what Joe Biden's are. The man is incredibly popular. You would think maybe the Russians are paying a tad bit more attention to how they feel their country's being run than the politicians and talking heads here in America that tell you he's just no good, he's got to go. Approval ratings, they don't have Biden on this list that I pulled up. They give just average approval ratings for their terms in office. We know Biden is somewhere in the mid-30s to maybe low 40s. Donald Trump's average approval rating was 41.1, Barack Obama 47.9, George W. Bush 49.4, and that's certainly skewed by everybody's being boondoggled by the war on terror and his tough stance against 9/11, that this is why they take you to war. They do it for power. Now, Bill Clinton was at 55.1, and the biggest one, the highest one, George H.W. Bush, shockingly enough. He wasn't there very long. He was at 60.9, Reagan 52.8, Carter 45.0, Gerald Ford 47, Nixon 49. Johnson, of course, the highest one in modern times has been John Kennedy at 70%. And for some reason, a country where 70% of the people approved of the president of the United States, we didn't really have a big problem with them murdering him in the middle of an afternoon in broad daylight in Dallas, Texas. We just kind of let that lie. They're still concealing evidence, still concealing facts around the killing of this most popular president in all of modern times with an average approval rating of 70%. They were able to assassinate him and move on. This was the coup. This is when they overthrew the United States government, when they assassinated John F. Kennedy, and the American people did nothing about it. It's been gloves off ever since then by this deep state that took over on that day. That John Kennedy was killed. But it's just a little fascinating to me just to kind of juxtapose the two and say, you know, when you hear them talk about how unpopular Vladimir Putin is, how his inner circle's turning against him, how his generals don't like him, how people are fleeing the country, let's put a little perspective to it. His approval rating with the Russian people is about double what the president of the United States right now has here. So maybe, maybe Vladimir Putin to the Russian people is not the problem. Even though he has started a war that many people in Russia probably don't like, they know it's going to extend resources for them. Russian soldiers will die. People have a lot of friends and relatives in Ukraine, historically being a part of Russia. But still, he's around 75% approval rating, while the nut job in our office is somewhere floating around 36-38%, and we all suspect that those polls are even juiced. So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting perspective when you hear these headlines about how bad Vladimir Putin is for Russia. The Russians don't seem to think that. What's the frequency, can it be sharp and so tight? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB here in the Mack Hike of Flowood Studios. Appreciate you joining me today. Next hour, we will move on, get into some health-related topics where it's an empowering segment, I believe. It's always good to hear people's testimonials. Next week, I believe, I'm going to have Dr. Mike Stonington on. We're going to talk about the medical schools. What is left out of all of those years? I mean, you think about, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that we have got kids in schools for, what, is it 7 hours a day? Something like that. 7 hours a day for 12 years. That's a lot of time. The schools probably get more time. Well, not even probably. I think it's the case. The schools get more time with our children than we do, typically. They get 12 years, 7 hours a day for 10 months a year, and they give them no marketable skills. You know, they may teach them the basics. They'll teach to the test. They may be able to pass a state-required test, but they can't communicate. They can't speak correctly. They don't really, they're just given no tools. I just find it amazing that with all of those 12 years, 7 hours a day, we can't teach them anything. But it's the same case with medical schools. They can go through 4 years of pre-med studies and then get into 8 years of medical training, and then maybe 4 years in a fellowship or a specialty. So what is that? I didn't add those. So that's 16 years. Some doctors go through 16 years of training. They can't squeeze a couple of days about nutrition in there. So I did an interview with Dr. Mike Stonington last time he was in here, and we're going to, I still need to edit it and put it together, and we'll play it on the show as well. But anyway, next hour, health stuff. It was interesting. They're talking today. The Federal Reserve is poised to raise rates again. The Fed is going to continue to raise rates until something breaks, and then they're going to do a pivot. People are starting to hear about this pivot now. I've been telling you about the pivot ever since, I believe, the first day that they started raising rates. They will ultimately, I believe, they will chicken out. They will start cutting rates again to continue to duct tape and paperclip and phony up this economy, because we just can't handle any pain. It doesn't matter how the excesses we've had. We are a bunch of people who love to drink but can't stand a hangover, so we just need to keep on drinking. And that's exactly what the Fed can't take away too much of the punch bowl. They're diluting it a little bit, but people are going to start getting a hangover. As soon as they do, they're going to pour the gin right back in the bucket. But it's just interesting to listen to the news talk about this. Get ready to pay higher rates on all of your loans. This will hurt the American people, but this is what we get for allowing this. And again, the Republican Party completely absent on the conversation about what created the actual inflation. They blame it instead on Joe Biden for partisan talking points, don't educate the American people. So we are doomed to repeat this mistake again and again and again and again. Federal Reserve always responsible for this inflation, but they're going to raise rates. I believe if they raise by 0.75%, which is what they're talking about, 75 basis points, this would take us up to, I believe, 4%. And this could just be a catastrophe for our country. Do you know how weak you have to be financially to not be able to withstand 4% interest rates as an economy? Does that show you how addicted? Because many years before, in decades before, 4, 5, 6% rates, those were perfectly normal. We were able to function. But our politicians in both parties have spent so much money and encouraged so much money printing, which has led to so much debt across the entire system, from the government to the corporation to the consumer. They have created this debt-based scenario that we're living in right now to where 4% may be the catastrophe and things start to really break and make them retreat. Now, this was during 2018, during Trump's term. They raised rates up to, I think it was only 2.5%. Did they get to 3%? I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly. That's when things started breaking then. And Trump immediately took to the microphones to say, I think they needed to, this is not fair. They gave Barack Obama 0% interest rates. I think they needed to take them back down to zero or negative, Donald Trump said. We needed negative interest rates. Donald Trump wanted so many people to borrow money that they would get paid for it. You wouldn't pay interest on your debt. You'd actually be paid to take on more debt. Does that make any sense to anybody? Yet that's what Donald Trump was calling for, and the Fed acquiesced, and they took rates right back down to zero. And so now we're paying the price for that. That move alone in 2018 might have mitigated some of the inflation had they stuck to their guns and kept interest rates higher, but they didn't. They took them right back down to zero when things started to break in the economy. And I believe that they will do that again. This just tells you this inflation is here to stay. Just get used to it. As I've told you before, much like Anthony Kiedis with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we've all got to have some perspective and realize that 2022, the great inflation shock of 2022, there's going to be a time where you call this the good old days. So enjoy your 10% inflation. It's actually, well, we know, officially recognized at 8%. We all know it's somewhere in the 14 to 16% range out here in the real world, since they monkey with the statistics. But that 14 to 16% inflation that you're enjoying this year, just lap it up. Because with the Federal Reserve in charge of things and the political class that we've got running things, these are going to be the good old days in the next, 2 to 5 years. We'll see how it works. I watch so much financial media because I'm fascinated by it. There are people who say the Fed will pivot, and there are people who say, no, the Fed is going full bore. They are going to let this thing collapse the economy, take us into a very deep recession in order to combat inflation. And these are very smart people who know more about the inner workings of the Fed than I do. So I don't know that I necessarily agree with them. I just can't imagine in my mind that this institution is going to allow things to really, really break in our economy in order to get this inflation. I think people, you know, what's interesting, I think that people are now used to the inflation. I don't know if I'm just noticing it. It seems like we're really not talking about it quite as much. There's more things to talk about. There's Fetterman. There's Paul Pelosi. I think that if you leave 10% inflation, or what we know is the real 15% inflation, if you leave it in place for a year or so, people get used to it. And next year when it's reported, at, let's just say it goes down from 8% to maybe 6%, Americans won't think to themselves, isn't this compounding on last year's 8%? I mean, it compounds. People don't really talk about that. So I believe if they let inflation stew a little bit longer, Americans will just get used to it and accept it like we do so many other things. If I was in politics and one of these nefarious, dirty players like we have in Washington, D.C., that would be my strategy. You just have to suffer through the initial grumbling. And if you can get through that initial grumbling and just let it persist, people eventually get distracted and move on to something else. There was a story today that was on the Wall Street Journal. I can't read the story to you because it was behind a paywall, and I'm not paying the Wall Street Journal a dollar. But the headline was, another clickbait for me, why are our attention spans shortening? I don't know that I really need to read the article. I have actually talked about it a great deal here on this show, especially after watching those new YouTube shorts or whatever they're called. We started out with, I guess, Instagram stories that were short. Then we went to TikTok where it's 60 seconds. And now YouTube's got this really bizarre, I think, ultimately dangerous thing of like 8-second clips. And so I don't have any doubt of why the attention spans are shortening, but I think the political class can use that to their advantage. They only have to take us just to a new crisis, and people will stop talking about the inflation. We've got the article in the Atlantic that I haven't gotten to yet, and I really need to kind of pick it apart, but they're calling for amnesty for everybody during the COVID years. Yeah, we might have gotten some things wrong, but let's just all come back together and forget about everything that happened over the last 2 years. There are an awful lot of people who have seen the damage of these shots, seen what happened to our children as we stripped years of their lives. We've seen what's happened to the test scores. We know how dangerous the masks are. We see them trying to push shots on toddlers. We're not in a big forgiving amnesty mood right now, particularly if you do not admit that you were wrong and apologize for it in the first place. Now, interpersonally, I believe forgiveness is a very valuable tool. You need to move on. Hate will consume you. But when it comes to the political class and the medical establishment, until they come out and acknowledge what they did and do their mea culpa, I'm not in any mood. And I think a lot of people are in no mood to just go, oh, okay, we'll let bygones be bygones, particularly when they are still forcing this shot on people in some agencies, and many people have just been financially destroyed. It'll take people years to get their lives back from what took place during COVID. Mandatory vaccinations, small businesses shuttered. It'll take them years to struggle to get back to even after what they did. And it's a hell of a thing for the Atlantic to come out and go, hey, can we all just, let's just all agree we all made a few mistakes. I got to tell you, I'm not sure at WYAB here, I'm not saying we got every single thing right, but I don't know that history will judge us harshly at all, as we pointed out how ridiculous the masks were, as we talked about how wrong the lockdowns were and how counterproductive they are. I've even talked about rise of the superbug, and now we got RSV all over the place. I think that history is going to judge us quite kindly, but I don't think there's anybody, at least here at this station, and a lot of people that I know on our side, that are really in mood to just forgive and forget everything anytime soon. Be right back. You can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. You're the Renegades, it is the time of age. All right, the other day I talked about the thing. I was watching some campaign speeches and some politicians running in the midterms talking, and I can't stand it. It doesn't matter what side they're on. Every time a politician opens their mouth, what I hear is, I think you're stupid enough to believe this. And then they give some partisan talking point on either side. Both of them are so unimaginative and just, but people like the hits. They want you to play the hits, the vast majority of people. And then I see this. You want to talk about an organization that thinks that you're an idiot. That is this current White House. So the White House apparently has sent out a tweet. And this is what the tweet from the White House says. Seniors are getting the biggest increase in their Social Security checks in 10 years through President Biden's leadership. Holy cow. And I guess this might work. You know, I don't know if they focus group every single tweet or every single bit of messaging. But quite obviously, Social Security benefits are tied to the rate of inflation. They are basically automatic increases. And as I will call to the attention of anybody receiving Social Security, if the government had been honest about inflation over the past 50 years, your Social Security checks would be double what they are right now. But they lie and manipulate the inflation figure so they can give you smaller cost of living adjustments. But this inflation is just too big to ignore, so they're having to jack up Social Security benefits, which also is just on top. We're paying more on the debt now. The amount we're paying on the debt has already doubled this year. And now add this to it, Social Security, one of the largest entitlement programs through Daddy Fed. Now they're giving the biggest increase in Social Security benefits. But for the Biden White House to come out and say, hey, look what we're doing. Isn't this great? It's Biden's leadership. I mean, it's almost an admission. Hey, look at this. We've created so much inflation for you people that we're able to give you some more money in your Social Security checks. Holy cow. That is a tweet saying, yeah, we think the American people are just stupid enough that this may gain some traction. They think you're idiots. And it's interesting, this may work on a lot of seniors. You have to get older if you're a young adult or if you're a teen. You think to yourself when you're young, well, wisdom comes with age. Well, as I have aged and my friends and relatives and people around us that you interact with on a societal level age, you get to an age where you realize, no, Age has absolutely nothing to do with wisdom or intelligence. There are plenty of people out there of every single age. I know some young, sharp high school kids that could do intellectual circles around senior citizens who have lived an entire life. You would think they would have gotten the benefit of wisdom with age, but it escapes them. So there may be some seniors who actually believe this. Are you going to get your Social Security? And again, it's below the cost of living. You're still going backwards. I'll put it that way. I can't remember what the cost of living adjustment was. It might have been 10%. You're still going backwards. We know the real rate of inflation in this country is somewhere around 15% in real world terms. You're still losing 5% of purchasing power on your Social Security checks. Holy cow. We really, I keep mentioning Idiocracy, but it's not because I'm obsessed with the movie. It's because I keep getting slapped in the face with things that show that we are either trending that direction or we are well there. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios, and it is Wednesday. Every Wednesday, 10 to 11 o'clock, I think it's the most empowering segment on radio in Central Mississippi, and that is Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You have to do a little bit of work. There's no way around that, and it can be confusing. I'm going to get into some stuff today that I think is going to be kind of confusing to people. Understanding what makes us tick, understanding what we need to be our best selves, to be in our optimum physical shape. Your body's tendency is for basically perfect health. It's the most amazing machine on planet Earth. I don't care how much technology they come out with. The human body is absolutely incredible in its ability to rebound, fix itself with just the input of food. But you do have to do some work. But we're going to get into today some stuff that may seem a little odd and could be somewhat counter to some things I've covered before. Now look, as I do things and as I research things, I learn new things. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the new things that that I'm learning, see if it's something that's of interest to you. Particularly if you suffer from an autoimmune disease, you may need to listen to this show or share it with those in your life who have them. Apparently, they're everywhere. I start every show by explaining to you, first off, I am not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, not a biologist, I'm not a chemist, I'm not a vaccinologist, not an immunologist, not a virologist, I'm not a surgeon, I'm not a nurse, I'm not a nothing. I've got no certification to advise you on your health. I'm just bringing you some information, and then I'll share it with you if you want to. You can always email me, mikemadison@wyab.com, and I'll send you links to anything that I cover or the entirety of my show notes if you want to dig deeper into a topic. Ultimately, the research is on you. Decisions are on you. I continue I don't have a good start date for this. I can't believe I don't know. I think I'm about 5 weeks into doing the carnivore diet. This is entirely meat-based. I eat a ton of Stonington Farm beef. That's the majority of my diet. I eat ribeyes, chuck eye steaks, hamburger, and liver. Some organ meats from Stonington Farm, but you can also have cheese. I have some kefir, which is like a fermented yogurt. I'll have a lot of eggs. I think eggs are just like little vitamins in a shell. So I do eat a lot of eggs. But it's all animal products. I have not had what would be a traditional vegetable now in 5 weeks. And I feel fantastic. I am not trying to convince everybody that to do what I do. But I'm finding carnivore more and more interesting as a concept for better health. The more I learn about it, we're going to talk a little bit about it. For my results, I would say the most noticeable thing, because I felt good before, the most noticeable thing is my joints. I'm lifting a little bit more weight at the gym. My shoulders are a little more sturdy than they had been before. I've had some shoulder and back issues. I've talked about this before. The only downside I've seen is that I do need to eat. When I am not on this diet, when I've done keto, sometimes I just don't feel like eating, and I may go just about 24 hours eating 300 calories just because I'm not hungry and it doesn't really seem to affect me. With this, if I don't have some fat, at some point during the day, I can have a sinking spell. It's not like a blood sugar crash, but it is a noticeable drain of energy. So I need to make sure that I am eating enough, which is what I want to do because I'm actually trying to gain a little bit of weight. But what I've been learning more and more about it is the science around carnivore and how extensive it is. There is a guy out there, Dr. Paul Saladino. Dr. Paul Saladino. And I spent 2 hours listening to a podcast. I actually went in looking at carnivore because this is relatively new to me. I've been looking at it for about a year, but I'll be honest with you, I kind of thought it was a little nutso, just like everybody else does. More about that in a second. But I've been toying around with it. So the other day I went and I was looking to see what Dr. Joseph Mercola, who is probably more responsible for helping me reclaim my health through his information than anybody else, I wanted to see what he thought about carnivore. And I ran across a podcast where Dr. Paul Saladino was talking to Dr. Mercola for 2 hours. And boy, does he know his science. If you're impressed by those things, if you're a health nerd like me, you need to check out this interview. It was pretty fascinating to me. A lot of things I didn't understand. But he cited study after study and the mechanisms within the body. Dr. Paul Saladino is a carnivore and has been for some period of time, and he prescribes it for his patient. And I'll be honest, he talked about a time he had gone on the doctor's TV show, and they basically attacked him. To me, that's a bolstering of his credentials. When the mainstream establishment medical doctors come out against him, the pill pushers, when they come out against something, it makes me actually pay more attention to it. But it's very interesting. The meat, especially that from Stonington Farm, is just loaded with nutrition. And I've learned a lot about that in the past year. I have long been a fan of nutrients found in plants, of course. And it seems that meat, as I've studied these things, because I'm curious, am I going to suffer any nutritional deficiencies by just being in animal products stuff? Meat has lower levels in some areas than plant foods do. Maybe you get less vitamin C for something. Maybe you get some other nutrient that's not as prevalent as it is in vegetables. So I've been concerned, am I going to have some kind of nutritional deficiencies? What is very interesting, though, is that I've seen people who have done carnivore for years and years, possibly decades, and they're doing great. Now, I always caution people when it comes to things like diet sodas. Just because it doesn't kill you tomorrow doesn't mean it's good for you. And diet sodas are their own thing. They actually cause things like diabetes and weight gain, strangely enough. But so I don't want to be that person who goes, well, I've only been eating meat for 6 months and I feel great, because if I'm doing internal damage, it could be long term and I may suffer the consequences 10 years down the road. I don't want to do that. Just because it makes me feel good today does not necessarily mean that it's healthy. Turns out, and it's very interesting, there are many nutrients that we use in our body to actually process all the carbohydrates we're eating. My diet right now is basically almost a no-carb diet. I think some days I get one or two carbs a day, but zero carbs. And they have told us from the top down in the food pyramid, you need carbs for energy. That is being debunked more and more every single day. I have zero carbs. But apparently the higher nutritional level that you need from some plants, much of it is dedicated towards actually processing the carbs that you're eating. And if you're not eating the carbs, you don't need the higher level of some of these nutrients because they're not being depleted by what you do with carbs. So this was interesting. There's also something called anti-nutrients in plants that block some nutrient absorption. And so while meat might not have some of the highest level of certain nutrients, because you're absorbing more of them by not blocking them with certain plant foods, and I am not telling everybody, run away from plants. I'm just giving you the science, and when I come back, I'm going to play a clip about these anti-nutrients in plants. It's interesting. Plants have defense mechanisms. They don't want to be eaten by predators. It's really pretty fascinating. The whole earth is fascinating to me. But there are things that I'm not saying that you just never should eat a plant because it's trying to kill you. What I am saying is that it does have mechanisms within your body for certain plants that maybe actually block absorption of certain nutrients. So cutting them out is not the disaster that I thought it would be. So we're going to talk a little bit about these anti-nutrients when we come back. As I say, this is just interesting to me, and it's something to think about. If you have an autoimmune disease, and this Dr. Paul Saladino talks about it in just about every interview he does. He's a practicing physician, an MD. He prescribes the carnivore diet for people suffering from autoimmune diseases with great success. And what carnivore probably really burst on the scene with the daughter of Jordan Peterson. I believe her name may be Michaela Peterson, something along those lines. I'm not sure. There's an interview I have with her that I want to listen to. I've got it queued up, but I haven't gotten to it yet. But she had basically crippling health problems, and she switched over to a carnivore diet and regained her health. So autoimmune may be one of those things. You may be triggered, unknowingly, may be triggered by some of these anti-nutrients in a particular plant you're eating. Maybe not all of them are bad, but maybe one or two of them you shouldn't be eating. And it's difficult to diagnose that unless you do a complete elimination diet. Anyway, she gained her health back. So if you've got an autoimmune disease, a carnivore diet may be something that you look at just to repair your body. Doesn't mean you have to be carnivore for the rest of your life. But if you're looking for some healing and some relief, there seems to be some pretty big evidence out there that giving your body a break from plants may be very beneficial. When we come back, we're going to listen to a girl talk a little bit. I thought the science was good. She's plain spoken, not too sciencey. I like the real sciencey stuff, but I try to spare you from that. And then we're going to talk about cholesterol. Every single person, I think every single person that where carnivore has come up, and I'm not like a vegan. I'm not running around, hey, how are you doing? My name's Mike. I'm on the carnivore diet. I promise, I don't do that. But a lot of people that I know or they hear the show or someone saw me the other day buying some more great Stonington Farm beef, and I was just laughing with them. I know them well. They know I do all kinds of little diet hacks. And I told them I was doing carnivore. First question out of everybody's mouth is, well, have you had your cholesterol tested? Everybody's so concerned about cholesterol, so we are going to debunk that as well. I've done it before, but within the context of eating a meat diet, this is the first concern everybody has. They roll their eyes when I tell them I'm not concerned about my cholesterol level, but I'll explain that to you also coming up. Stick around. Can I get your hand to ride on? Just a piece of leg to bite on. But I'm not to fly my kite on. Do you want to flash a light on? Take a look. Coming down, no, not today. Did you meet your fortune teller? I hope my vegan friend's not listening today. I haven't heard from her in a while. She may have abandoned the show a while back. Let me just say that I have one friend that is very committed vegan, talks about it a lot. She looks fantastic. She's incredibly healthy. She's in great shape. She's a middle-aged woman, doesn't look it. So this is not a war on plants the way that they're trying to do a war on meat, but it's just these things are interesting to consider. And if you're having some health problems, there's a possibility that some plants may be harming you. And maybe it may only be one of the 10 plants you eat a day, maybe two of them. You eliminate those and maybe you unlock some better health. A carnivore is almost like an elimination diet of getting these things out of your diet. But I've heard of this concept of anti-nutrients in plants before, but I'll be honest, I hadn't really explored it too much. But with carnivore, it is one of the topics they talk about. This is just basically a health blogger. She goes by Health Coach Kate. And when I was searching YouTube or the internet for some good information on it, I thought it's a little long, but I think it gets through some things that are fairly important to consider in this concept of anti-nutrients in some of the plants that we're eating.
So what are anti-nutrients? Anti-nutrients are plant compounds that bind to minerals and stop their absorption, which can also cause autoimmune disturbances. Gluten is an example of an anti-nutrient, which most people are familiar with, even if they didn't know it was an anti-nutrient. It can cause damage to our intestinal walls, allowing food particles to go where they shouldn't be, which creates an autoimmune response. And this is just one example of an anti-nutrient causing autoimmunity. There are several other ways this can play out. In today's video, we are going to talk about the three main types of anti-nutrients: lectins, oxalates, and phytates. So why do anti-nutrients exist? You can think of anti-nutrients as a plant's defense mechanism. Plants do not want to be eaten, and this is their form of poison. Anti-nutrients originally evolved to fight off insect predators. For humans, it's more of a slow poison. You might not notice the symptoms immediately, and you might not drop dead, but they're still affecting you. If we could make the connection between these anti-nutrients, the foods they're in, and the symptoms, we wouldn't be eating them. But one of the problems is that we're eating just such a wide range of different foods that it's hard to pinpoint which one is causing which symptom. The other problem is we have normalized these symptoms. A lot of foods that are really, really high in anti-nutrients, such as spinach, we've been told they're really healthy. So we don't even question if they are causing negative health outcomes. First off, we're going to talk about lectins. Lectins are indigestible protein that travels through the gut unchanged. High quantities of lectins can damage the gut wall and cause food to leak through. The food isn't supposed to be there, so the body responds by becoming inflamed. Short-term inflammation is an appropriate response, but when we continue to eat foods high in lectins, our body doesn't have time to repair the damage, and we become chronically inflamed. I mentioned gluten at the start of this video. Gluten is actually a form of lectin. Lectins also bind with minerals such as iron, zinc, and copper, meaning that your body can't absorb them. Some foods that are high in lectins are wheat, soybeans, red kidney beans, peanuts, tomatoes, potatoes, and chickpeas. Soaking, sprouting, and cooking can mitigate lectins, but it can't destroy them completely. For example, raw kidney beans contain between 20 and 70,000 units of lectins. While fully cooked, these beans will contain between 200 to 400. Next up are oxalates. Oxalates are an organic compound found in many plants. They can cause kidney stones, and actually 8 out of 10 cases of kidney stones are caused by oxalates. Oxalates are different from other forms of anti-nutrients because whereas things like lectins are more a case of someone being sensitive to them, oxalates are actually a buildup within the body. They can also cause thyroid dysfunction, and again, they bind to minerals, specifically calcium. Foods high in oxalates are spinach, rhubarb, rice bran, buckwheat, almonds, wheat, potatoes, and soybeans. And finally, we have phytates. Phytates serve as the main storage form of phosphorus in seeds, and they are actually shown to have some benefits. When phytic acid binds to minerals in the gut, it prevents the formation of free radicals, thus making it an antioxidant. Not only that, but it seems to bind to heavy metals. However, once again, they bind to minerals. Iron, zinc, copper. You think you are getting these minerals when you're eating these foods, but you're actually not. For example, consuming 5 to 10 milligrams of phytic acid can reduce iron absorption by 50%. And one interesting thing that I found when I was researching this video is that ruminant animals, so that's things such as cows, sheep, goats, they possess a phytate-producing flora for digesting phytic acid. So basically, they can digest it, while the human digestive system can't. Foods high in phytates are almonds, beans, Brazil nuts, lentils, peanuts, wheat, and soybeans. So should we stop eating these foods altogether? It depends on how sensitive you are. Like I said before, with proper preparation, anti-nutrients can be mitigated. And for some people, mitigating them may be enough. For others, it's definitely not. There is also the argument that anti-nutrients can be a positive stressor, making the body stronger going forward. But let's look at something like almonds. If you're eating almonds day in and day out, you're going to be getting more than a generous dose of anti-nutrients every single day. And this goes beyond being a positive stressor. And I think this is one big reason why some people feel better on a carnivore than a keto diet. Lots of keto foods are based around things like almonds, and cutting them out means that you are just getting rid of so many anti-nutrients in your diet. Anyways, guys, that's all I have for you today.
So I find that's very, very interesting. I've been a big consumer of almonds, never noticed any ill effects to my health. So in trying carnivore, my big concern has been, what am I missing out on? And what I'm kind of realizing is that I'm maybe more optimally using the nutrition from the meat. I'm not having anything block the absorption. I've had, you know, and it's just interesting. 5 weeks is no testimonial, really. And I felt good going into this. I still feel great. As you know, I won't say this has been anything that's been incredibly profound. My energy level is certainly great. Generally is pretty good. But it's just, it's interesting science. And and the more I dig into it. But the biggest thing that I hear when it comes to carnivore, and it really doesn't matter if it's carnivore or anything, basically every single sitcom or anything like that, it's always the wife nagging the husband. He can't eat certain things because of his cholesterol. And the number one biggest prescribed medication out there, I believe, antidepressants may be knocking on the door, but I believe the biggest prescribed medication, which garners billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars for Big Pharma, are statins to address the cholesterol situation. And everybody that I've talked to about carnivore, I don't think there's been a single exception. They all ask, well, aren't you concerned about your cholesterol? So we're going to do, when I come back, a little bit about cholesterol, starting out with Dr. Sinatra, one of the authors of the cholesterol myth. Now, a lot of people roll their eyes when I tell people I'm not worried about cholesterol, but I've done my research. We're also going to talk not only about why this demonization of cholesterol is wrong-headed, but what are the reasons that we need cholesterol? You're not going to hear that from mainstream medicine. Cholesterol is incredibly important to the proper functioning of your body. So we'll get to that when we get back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You're doing Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. We do it every Wednesday if you want other of these shows. If you're interested in just in health topics in general, most people should be, particularly if you don't feel well. There's keys to your health and nutrition. You need to find them. You can check out the podcast. Just search for the Mike Madison Show. Just go to the Wednesday shows. It's in the second hour. Or if you want any notes or anything that I cover during the course of a show, you can email me, mikemadison@wyab.com, and I'll send you links to anything I talk about, or I'll send you my entire show notes, and you can do your own research. Ultimately, it's up to you. We know that for the past 50 years, they have gotten us with this low-fat diet. And this, the tide on this has been turning slowly for a while. I think it's turning quickly now. We realize they put us on low-fat diets and diet sodas, and what happened? We all got fatter and sicker. And we've broken this down, the fraud that started the low-fat diet in the first place. But many people are still sticking to this, but more and more people are realizing how wrong that was. Now, we're not talking about eating fried chicken. We're talking about good, healthy fats. You need them. That's including meat and animal fats. But the other thing that they've told us for a couple of decades now, and they've made billions of dollars doing it, and it doesn't seem like we're all that much more healthy, and that is this attack on cholesterol. And when I tell people I'm eating a bunch of meat these days, their first question is, well, what about your cholesterol? Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit today. This first clip I've got is from Dr. Steven Sinatra. I believe he gives a little bit of his credentials in this. He's wearing a white lab coat when he talks about this stuff, so you got to listen to him. We love the white lab coat. We have accepted a whole lot of things if somebody's wearing a white lab coat. Well, this guy's wearing a white lab coat. And he is a cardiologist. His thing here says he's an integrative cardiologist, which is fantastic. That means he's not a guy who just carries water for traditional treatment of the heart, but he looks to find out what you're doing, maybe nutritionally, that's damaging your heart in the first place. And he looks to fix that rather than just let people get really sick, do open heart surgery, and buy a vacation home. So anyway, Dr. Sinatra here wrote a book with Johnny Bowden called The Cholesterol Myth. You can find interviews about that online, or you can buy the book yourself, but it's a very interesting read. I read it years and years ago. I've talked about this topic a few times, but I wanted to revisit it when I'm talking about this heavy meat diet. This is Dr. Steven Sinatra.
You know, in our book, The Great Cholesterol Myth, Dr. Johnny Bowden and I exposed this myth. We looked at the history. For example, there was this study called the Seven Country Study, when Ansel Keys cherry-picked the data showing that countries with higher cholesterol had more heart problems. And when you cherry-pick the data, it makes sense. But look, let me give you an example. He left the island of Crete out in the Mediterranean. Now, the average cholesterol for an inhabitant of Crete was over 200. But they didn't have any heart problems there for even a decade. Now think about that. Over 100, no heart problems. Something doesn't make sense. And there were other countries as well. It just didn't fit. What I want to talk about today is Don't fear cholesterol number, folks. Look, it's only a number. And cholesterol does a lot of great things for the body. And I also want to reassure you that what you put in your mouth, saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, you know, healthy fats, omega-3 fats, they're not to be vilified. They're good for you. Eggs are good for you. An organic egg once a day is great for you. Coconut's a saturated fat. That's good for you. But why did saturated fats get vilified? Because they got turned into cholesterol in the body. And if cholesterol is the bad guy, well, then we got to throw out those fats. And then we went on these low-fat diets. And then guess what happened with that? People were gaining weight. Hey, they even developed heart problems later on in life. Something's wrong with the low-fat diet, especially if you combine it with these, you know, carbs, that these sugary carbs that create inflammation in the body. There's been an incredible leap over the last 4 or 5 decades. When I was a young doctor, I really bought the fact that cholesterol and heart problems, you know, went hand in hand. In fact, I was a choir boy for cholesterol. When I was chief of cardiology at my institution in Connecticut, I used to lecture for the drug companies. Why? Because I believed that cholesterol and heart problems were so entrenched that I wanted to teach other doctors. But guess what? Something happened in 1993 that changed my whole opinion on statin drugs. There was a research article that came out showing that coenzyme Q10, like cholesterol, was severely depleted by statin drugs. Didn't make any sense, folks. How could the most vital nutrient for the heart be knocked out of the box? The heart requires CoQ10 for survival. I started to question. It didn't make any sense. And around that time, I was doing the angiograms anyway, and I wasn't seeing a correlation of heart problems with higher cholesterol. Something had to give. I started reading more and more. And studies came out. They were showing positive impacts of statin drugs on heart health. But a lot of it was sort of statistical gymnastics. They were talking about relative risk and absolute risk. It was hodgepodge. And when Dr. Johnny Bowden and I wrote the book, The Great Cholesterol Myth, dozens of doctors were on our side. They saw the light too. So it wasn't just, you know, our myth-busting situation about cholesterol. Now it's becoming more and more mainstream. So cholesterol is not the villain of heart health. Cholesterol does a lot of great things in the body.
And we're about to get to a clip about what cholesterol is responsible for in the body. It's incredibly important in the human body. Again, this is a cardiologist, and I love these doctors who can get into something. Pharmaceutical companies explain to them, hey, if you see this, give them this pill, and they can buy into it. And then they pay attention to their patients, and they start looking at them and saying, this isn't adding up. I need to research this a little bit more. That's rare. I think that's fairly rare in the medical community. They don't really look at the evidence of their eyes. They just take the literature and whatever is accepted, and they just keep doing it over and over again. This is why we're 50 years into a low-fat diet that's making people fatter. They refuse to acknowledge this has been a big swing and a miss. Probably for many medical professionals, the idea, once they believe that fat makes you fat, to go against that, it's very laudable. They were trying to keep people healthier. But we're 50 years in. That's not working, and we know the problems that a high carbohydrate diet is causing people. We can see it when we go in the grocery store. It's not hard to spot. It's not a hidden epidemic of obesity and overweight people. And certainly not a hidden epidemic of people who are markedly less healthy than we were a few generations ago. You can judge that by the number of pharmaceuticals sold to address all of these problems. But this is a clip with our friend Dr. Berg explaining why cholesterol is so important.
Let's talk about why cholesterol is so biologically important. Typically, when you talk about cholesterol, people are afraid of it. Okay, they're trying to avoid it. But why does your body make so much? It makes 3,000 milligrams every single day. The less you consume in your diet, the less the body will make. If it was that dangerous, it doesn't make sense that the body would make so much of it. Well, let's talk about why you need it. First of all, you need it to make bile. Bile is an essential fluid that helps you break down fats. It helps you break down fats so you can extract the fat-soluble vitamins and the essential fats, like, for example, omega-3 DHA, from your food so your cells can use these healthy fats. Then we have vitamin D, which is really a hormone, but we're going to call it a vitamin. But vitamin D is probably one of the most important vitamins. Well, guess what? You need cholesterol to make vitamin D. All the sex hormones are made from cholesterol. Estrogen, testosterone, cortisol. Your brain is made up of 50% fat and 50% cholesterol. In fact, out of all the tissues in the body that make up the organs, the brain only represents like 2%. Yet it uses a tremendous amount of cholesterol. The brain synapses are lined with cholesterol. They're made out of cholesterol. The myelin sheath that surrounds the nerves to prevent the nerves from becoming short-circuited need cholesterol. So without this protective cholesterol myelin sheath, the nerves can't work. As in MS, for example, you have a loss of myelin from an autoimmune condition, not a dietary deficiency of cholesterol, and you have all sorts of neurological problems. But the most important biological function of cholesterol has to do with your cell membranes, okay? Now, this is interesting because 40% of all the cholesterol that's made in your body is needed for this cellular membrane. Now, why is that important? Because you have all the cell receptors for hormone communication, neurotransmitter communication. All the ion channels are in the cell. Those are the little channels that allow minerals to go back and forth. You have all sorts of enzymes on the surface of this cell that help transport things in and out of the cell selectively. And it's designed to keep the bad stuff out and the viruses out and the good stuff in. They're basically enzyme pumps to establish different concentrations of minerals inside the cell and outside the cell for the purpose of creating an electrical potential to allow nerves to be transmitted and muscles to contract and relax. The cell membrane allows certain fat-soluble vitamins to enter the cell to go into the nucleus of the cell, as compared to water-soluble, can't get through that layer. Also, the cell membrane allows hormones to go into the cell through the receptors, and also it has a lot to do with signaling different communication particles throughout the body. So this cell membrane is very, very dynamic. It's changing on a constant basis. It's there to protect us against a lot of the dangerous things that can invade our cells. And I just wanted to create this video to show you the vital importance of what cholesterol does in your body.
And isn't that interesting? I mean, how many people do you think if you saw on the street wouldn't think that we should be taking every step we can to mitigate all cholesterol? It has been demonized, yet it is responsible for so many important functions of the human body. I don't have a clip for it today, but I will bring it up again. I'm not going to hit this entire subject again, but I've seen information on this number that you're given from your doctors. And I believe there are three numbers. I'm not well-versed enough to speak to it right now, but there are three numbers. They focus in on one of them. And many doctors out there, cardiologists, other people who are interested in these kinds of things, are pointing out to, they're really kind of pointing at the wrong number in the first place. But it's the number that is always the highest and most alarming and leads to the biggest number of prescriptions for statin drugs. So I'll bring that to you in another show. But I think that the war against cholesterol is very similar to me as the war on fat, and they're obviously related. But another big swing and a miss, or a diabolical plot to sell billions and billions and billions of dollars of statin drugs, which they have successfully done. Not telling anybody to rush off and get off your statins. I don't know your particular situation. I don't know what your life is like, but to do this kind of research if you understand that there are side effects to those drugs. So is it worth, are you addressing a problem that really exists, that's really a problem for you, or is it just some number they've picked out of thin air in order to put you on a very, very profitable prescription? I think most of our Spidey sensors are going off about Big Pharma right now. I'm here to keep that momentum going. I'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the day. This show is powered by, for the last 5 weeks, the show has been powered by Stonington Farm Beef. As I go through this carnivore experiment with myself, which seems to be going great, about 75% of all the food I'm eating, I eat a lot of eggs, I'll eat a little bit of chicken, but the vast majority of what I'm eating is the great beef from Stonington Farm down in South Mississippi. This is a local farm, a mom and pop, literally. It's a doctor, Dr. Mike Stonington, and his wife, Katie, run this farm. Their kids are involved, and it was fantastic. They're starting to do smaller deliveries to the Jackson area since they've come on air that we've been trying to open to the Jackson market, and so that you could order like a half cow and have it delivered up here for free. Well, now they're making deliveries more regularly, and so you can call and order smaller amounts of stuff. I met Katie Stonington in a parking lot last Friday afternoon and picked up my beef. And I saw four or five other people coming in there. Thank goodness for all of you. Thank you for supporting this local farm. These are Mississippi-born, raised, and processed beef. They are fed only a grass diet, the way cows are intended to eat. It makes the nutritional profile of this meat fantastic. Higher in, lower in the omega-6s in relation to the omega-3s, which is a much healthier cut of meat, plus all of the other nutrition. Cows are not designed to eat grain. It makes them fattier. It makes them heavier, so you can get probably more yield off of a cow. But when we're talking about the health to the consumer, I certainly believe that grass-fed's the way to go. You can check out their products at stoningtonfarm.com. That's S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N, stoningtonfarm, singular, .com. You can see everything they offer, and just give them a call and find out the next time they're going to be up in Jackson and place an order. They've got great hamburger meat. And it's just as cheap as, it's cheaper than the organic meat at the grocery stores. I get pounds and pounds of it when they come up and deliver. They've got fantastic ribeyes, chuck eye steaks. They've got organ meats. They've got it all. You'll talk to a local farmer and get a far superior product. So please support Stonington Farm. They are doing God's work, and I am just absolutely thrilled to be associated with them. So you can get smaller orders now. Check them out. I don't have time to read my story. My social media, how social media is literally making teens mentally ill. I think it's a very important story, and I do include some mental health stuff here, but I don't have time to get into it. It's a long story. I'll save it for another day. But I did want to talk about something at the very end of this thing. You'll see a lot of charts, maybe fat consumption and heart attack chart or something along those lines, and maybe the lines line up. Charts are like statistics. They can be very manipulative. And so I heard Dr. Paul Saladino talking about this issue, and he referred me in this show to a website that talks about spurious correlations. I mean, there's a whole lot of things out there that if you chart them out, it looks like maybe they're attached. And I think the health authorities look at any chart of two things happening at the same time. They don't allow for co-founding factors. And they draw a conclusion and then come up with a drug to address what they now believe is a problem based on this chart. Now, this can be with anything. Natural health people could do the same thing. But you have to be careful of these charts. And I think this highlights it. I thought this was a very interesting site. So this guy, his name is Tyler Vegan. Not vegan as in eating plants. V-I-G-E-N. Maybe it's vegan. At TylerVegan.com. He's got these things called spurious correlations. I'm going to read you some of the charts. And again, my bad habit of trying to read charts over an audio format. But everybody knows what a line chart looks like. In each one of these charts, the lines are very similar. They look like they are highly correlated. The first chart he's got on here is U.S. spending on science, space, and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocation. Now, if you look at these two lines, you would think, oh, there must be a connection. Well, of course, you wouldn't think that. There's obviously no way to make that conclusion. It's just that the statistics line up. Here's some other interesting ones. I found this fascinating. There is, if you look at these charts really track the same path. The number of people who drowned by falling into a pool seems to correlate with films Nicolas Cage appeared in. per capita cheese consumption appears to correlate, if you look at the graphs and see that the lines mirror each other, per capita cheese consumption appears to have a correlation to the number of people who died by becoming tangled in their bedsheets. The divorce rate in Maine, luckily it has been coming down, but is it a coincidence that what has also been coming down at almost an identical rate is the per capita consumption of margarine? The age of Miss America seems to correlate, if you look at a chart, with the murders by steam, hot vapors, and hot objects. So these things are just extremely interesting. And when you realize that it's not just statistics, but it's all of these things that can be manipulated to look like they are correlated when maybe they are not. So it's something to kind of keep in your hat when you're looking at a chart. I can be guilty of the same thing. If a chart tells me what I want it to believe, what I want to believe, I might be prone to believe that chart. But understand, correlation does not always mean causation. That's all the time I got today. Have a fantastic one. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.